Hey, parents and coaches, are your kids using the right glove? The most important skill for youth athletes to learn is how to play proper catch. The problem is, most youth gloves are made with bad leather and are too big for small hands. They actually make it harder to play catch. That's why former Major League Baseball shortstop Kevin Smith created Cali Gloves. Cali Gloves are crafted from 100% Japanese kip leather and are the perfect size for kids. All Cali gloves come with palm slits, finger loops, and elastic wrist lacing that encourage proper hand placement, the right closing patterns, and give kids more confidence to go make plays. Cali gloves even allow parents to break in the glove without stretching out the fit. It's the glove Kevin wishes he had growing up and the glove all his teammates want for their kids. Visit CaliGloves.com to learn more and help your kids play better catch. That's Cali Gloves, K-A-L-I Gloves.com.
Welcome to this week's edition of In the Clubhouse with BMD Baseball. I'm Andy Kirikides, joined by my wonderful co-host, Mr. Keith Glasser. How are we doing?
Great, how are you?
Apologies to you, those of you listening, if I'm sniffling like a small child. Apologize. But we got a good topic today. And me and Keith have both been immersed in the academic and high academic world for a good portion of our careers. And I think batting around some conversation that we've had, wanted to dig a little bit deeper into the academic process and kind of what schools are looking for, maybe dispel the notion that being a really good baseball player gets you into a school that you wouldn't able to be get into. We'll unpack that a little bit. And then talk a little bit about kind of some of the standards at a lot of really reputable schools. And I think that where I'm going with this is that I think sometimes people overlook the pieces of the puzzle that are actually important on the transcript, right? You said it earlier, the underwater basket weaving is not going to factor in to your grade point average. It is going to be evaluated by the admissions office. But then also understanding how competitive it is academically, a lot of schools, and the idea of like being a 3.0 or a 3.1, 3.2 student, the reality of it is that you're about as average, and even in a lot of cases, probably a below average student when you start talking about the admissions process. Coach, I know you have a ton of experience with this. You want to take a second and kind of talk through academically the core pieces of the puzzle that actually matter when you're talking about how a GPA is calculated from an admissions officer standpoint?
I do. You paused just as Fast and the Furious decided to drive by my house. So when we're talking GPAs, you'll see weighted, unweighted. Weighted is generally going to be concerned with your AP's honors courses. A lot of GPAs can be inflated with your business classes, your gyms, your home ecs, if they even still do home economics in school anymore. Your underwater basket weavings, your make up the class that you're taking as an elective, and it can boost your GPA. When your GPA and your transcript gets sent to colleges, what coaches and in turn admissions officers are going to be really dialed in on are what do your core grades look like? So let's take, for example, when I was coaching at RPI, when I would get transcripts, I was not exclusively, but for the most part, there was a heavy weight, obviously, on the math and science grades. I wanted to see what your grades were like in your math and science classes, how high you've gone specifically in math, and then what types of science classes are you taking? Are they regular? Are they honors? Are they AP? And what grades are you getting in them? What doesn't really matter to me, because I've yet to see a transcript in my 16 years of coaching college baseball and for 2.5 years of doing this consulting stuff, I've yet to see a baseball player with a gym grade under a 99. Like, yes, it boosts your GPA, but it's not going to actually move the needle on you being admitted into said academic institution. So your core grades are really the ones that matter. And, you know, we're not going to go in depth on this, but it counts towards your qualifier, being a qualifier at the Division I level and the Division II level. But really, they're your math, your science, your history, your English, your foreign language classes that you're taking are going to be your core GPA that they're looking at to see where your GPA stacks up against everyone else. Now, can, you know, obviously, if you're going to go to, you know, a business school and you have a bunch of business classes on there, can that factor in? Sure. There's always going to be outliers and things that are specific to the course or the major that you're applying to, right? Like if you're going to go be an art major, then your art grade is likely going to factor into whether or not you're admissible and what your portfolio looks like. So, you know, there's going to be specific things that you're applying to that do have, you know, some outlier things that you're going to have to do. But by and large, for the majority of people that are just applying to college, it's going to be your core courses that kind of set you apart from everyone else when it goes into the types of grades. You know, if you have a 93 GPA, but you're, you know, mid 80s on your math, science, English, and history, and your GPA is more propped up with a lot of your electives, the likelihood of you being able to get into some higher end academic institutions is going to be less likely because you've struggled at the high school level in the core courses in which you're going to have to take when you get to college. So, you know, there is a little bit of a misnomer out there that, you know, if you're a good enough baseball player, anyone can get you in. And is there some truth to that in some places? Of course there are, right? Like that's why it's out there. But, you know, if you're looking to go into a higher end academic school, if you're looking at an Ivy League school, an NESCAC school, you know, some of the Liberty League schools, if not all of the Liberty League schools, some Centennial Conference schools, the Patriot League, right? Like your core GPA needs to be high. Now, I think along the same lines is what does that look like from an admission standpoint and a player standpoint, right? Like can they get players into that school that might be a little less competitive in the admissions process than a regular student athlete? Sure. That is a likelihood in that process. However, they might just be a tick or two below what the average is at that school. Right? Like the average, and I think this is important to note in admissions and stuff as well. Like when you see your average SAT, your average GPA, it's an average, right? So there's people above that average, there's people below that average, you know, so that's kind of how we get there. That, you know, you're still competitive in that process, and baseball or whatever sport it is that you play is a vehicle in which you're able to attend said school. Because you're very, very close. Not close enough, but I don't want to say close enough. You're very, very close to being admissible on your own. But being that you're going to play a sport moves the needle enough where it's like, yeah, this kid, I think he's going to be able to get in, or she's going to be able to get in and find success here at this school. The other side of that too, and I'm going a little, you know, long here for you, but the other side of it too is that specifically with athletics, the vast majority of schools, let me backtrack on that statement. The vast majority of schools have support systems in place for students to have success in college. There's even more for athletes that are designed straight up with the program itself, it could be, or within the athletic department itself as well. One, the athletic department might have their own athletic academic advisor. They're, you know, the program or the athletic department might be running study halls, things like that to make sure that student athletes are staying on track so that they can graduate in 4 years. They're keeping the right amount of credits. They know what classes they're taking, so they're not, you know, missing too much class, all of those types of things. But they're kind of fail safes that are put in place so that student athletes have the support to be able to get through college in 4 years while still being able to be competitive. And don't get me wrong, all of those things are available for regular students who are not athletes at the school. I just think that the vast majority of coaches and programs and student athletes take a lot more advantage of it because there's a lot more that they're being asked to do, right? Like, you know, it's 20 hours a week you get at the Division I level. The dirty secret here is that it's not actually 20 hours that you're going to be spending on the baseball field. It's going to be more than that. And, you know, not necessarily outside of from a practice standpoint, but, you know, games and travel and all those things are not factored in. You know, there's a cap on the hours of games, you know, which we all know could take longer, but travel's not factored in, you know, all of those types of things where, you know, hey, you got a series away for a week and it might be a 6-hour bus ride. That's 12 hours on a bus that you're away from campus doing stuff that is not factored in. So being able to get into study hall during that week and really be forced to get a lot of work done gives these student athletes an opportunity to really, you know, get ahead from a classwork standpoint because they're being asked to do more from a representation of the school standpoint.
Well, Coach Class, I don't know if you left me a whole ton to say.
Well, you told me that you were feeling a little under the weather. I wanted to make sure that, you know.
Well, you've also got extensive background in the admissions portion, which certainly more than qualifies you to talk about this. But I think you hit on a lot of the key points, which is understand what's actually getting factored into your GPA, because your 3.5 may not really be a 3.5. It might be more of like a 3.1 or a 3.2 when you take a couple of those electives away from your GPA. And, you know, this is why we talk about it. This is why we harp on guys doing the absolute best that they can in the classroom, because it helps you in a myriad of ways, whether it's more potential merit money. You have schools that are open to you that wouldn't otherwise be open if you weren't good enough academically. I think the only thing that I'll add is that I think that there's a lot of really good schools out there that I think people don't understand how competitive the admissions process is. Sure. Right? Everybody thinks the Ivy League, the Patriot League, right? And you got the big public schools like UVA and Michigan and, you know, these, you know, big kind of poster board public schools that have really good academic reputations. But you start to get into those really good academic private schools that are a lot more competitive than I think people think they are, right? And like your 3.5 GPA with an 1100 isn't going to move the needle for a lot of those schools that are just a touch below. So understand that academic portion can really open up some doors for you.
Well, I think the other thing too, and you kind of touched on, I think the merit money piece is a big one, especially at the Division III level. Obviously, there's merit money that's available at the Division I and II level, but you know, I think the one thing to note as well, like if you are a bottom end type guy academically at a school, you're probably not getting a ton of merit scholarship money at that school, because that's going to be given to, you know, you're probably just going to get the absolute bare minimum package that they have designed for those types of students. So it's always like, you know, we talk about it all the time that your grades are open up more doors and keep more doors open longer. But if you are that fringy academic, high-end academic kid, you just have to understand, like, yeah, they might be able to get you in, but there's give and take in this process, just as there is in anything else. You know, we talked about it with the, you know, you get to know that you get into school earlier, but you might have to make a decision before you know you've seen, you know, you've only seen 90% of what you wanted to see. You know, it's the same thing. Like you're going to know you get into school, but you know, you got into school and you're good enough, but you're probably not going to command a ton of merit money in that slot. If that makes sense.
No, it does. And it's kind of to close this out. We run into this every year with families where let's be honest, the cost of college at this point, or as they say in the UK, university, is can get quite expensive real quick as soon as you get out of your state system. Anytime you get into private schools or you get into another state system, the cost of attendance it can be a lot. I mean, it's not rare to see schools $70,000, $80,000, $90,000 all in. And that can be really difficult for people. The benefit of being a really good student is that, yeah, you may not be able to go to that quote unquote NESCAC school, even though you can get in because you can't do the price. That's fine. but you might get $30,000 or $40,000 at the next tier school below. And a lot of times that's where those conversations can go with really high academic kids where money is a concern, is that, hey, you've done such a good job, you're going to have access to money that you wouldn't have had otherwise. And for a lot of people, that's a difference maker, and it's something that really drives their process. So, yeah. Anything else you want to add?
Yeah, just get good grades, and then you don't have to worry about this stuff.
Just get good grades.
Just go to class.
Agreed. Is that it?
That's it. That's all I have.
All right. Thank you for listening, everybody. Tune in next week. We'll talk to you then. Thank you. Thank you for listening this week. If you're watching on YouTube, go ahead and hit that subscribe button and smash that like button for us. Check us out on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, as well as Spotify. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at EMDBaseball. If you want to find out what me and Keith do to help families and players navigate the recruiting process, go ahead and check us out on emdbaseball.com. Take a few minutes to check out our new online academy. I promise you'll get some good information out of that. Thanks again for listening. Check in with you next week.